Hello, everyone. I'm Luis, and this is The Debrief, a podcast from Incident.io. Now, today, we're sharing an extra special episode. Normally, if you've listened to previous episodes of The Debrief, you'd know that I'm typically your host. But this time around, your host is going to be none other than the CPO of Incident.io, Chris Evans. The focus of the conversation is build versus buy. Now, the decision to buy or build isn't exactly a straightforward one, and the decision you make can be influenced by a ton of factors. But the fact is that in some instances, buying can make more sense than building, and in others, building can make more sense than buying. But for Michael Cullum and his team at Bud Financial, the decision to buy ultimately was the right decision for them. So in this conversation, you'll hear Chris and Michael, VP of Engineering and Data at Bud, talk about their journey. What was it like relying on a Slack bot built in-house for incident response? What ultimately drove them to buy Incident.io? What life is like now with Incident.io in the fold, and a whole lot more. If you're in the middle of making your decision whether to build or buy, I think you'll find this conversation incredibly insightful. So here it is. Here's the conversation between Chris and Michael.
Michael, thanks so much for joining us. Love to start with a quick intro to like who you are, where you work, and what you do, if that's right.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Chris. Hi, I'm Michael. I'm the VP of Engineering and Data at Bud. We work with large financial institutions to use transactional data to generate opportunities from that data. So better digital channels, affordability assessments, being able to cross-sell, upsell, and target marketing opportunities, and so on and so forth.
Nice. Thank you. And I guess like we're here today talking about incident management, given I'm from Incident.io. You've been with Incident.io for like a really long time now. Like, you were one of the sort of early customers. You took a bit of a bet when we were a little bit smaller and a little bit less sort of shored up. Would love if you could cast your mind back to like what was like your incident management setup like before you had Incident.io?
Yeah, of course. So we had our own incident sort of Slack bot that we created. It'd been one of those things that gets created in a few days and then gets extra sort of little bits tacked onto. And it did quite a lot of stuff. It was quite cool. And it solved a problem for us in terms of how do you create, when an incident happens, how, simplifying a way of declaring an incident, creating a dedicated sort of Slack channel and a call to be able to discuss on that, and then being able to announce it into another channel, and potentially some sort of integrations with things like, paging solutions. And a friend of mine mentioned that they'd seen the Incident.io website pop up, and it was actually a former colleague. They were like, oh, look, someone's created an incident, basically the same kind of thing. My immediate reaction to seeing the very existence of Incident.io was, great, now someone else can do a proper job of what we've already done. So I remember hopping on a call with you folks and watching a demo. I think at that point it was fairly similar in terms of capability of what we had in our internal tool, but what I saw was the opportunity for a tool that can go well beyond that and can not just be something that solves the problem of being able to declare an incident and being able to create a Slack channel, but something that can actually help us improve our incident management processes and response with sort of further capability that come down the line. And what we've seen over the past few years is exactly that.
Nice. Yeah, well, we're very glad you sort of came along on the journey with us. It's been good. You mentioned something that sort of stuck out to me, which is like how you initially we're like, we'll just build this thing, right? It's a Slack bot. It's pretty simple. Like, how hard is it to hook into Slack's API when a slash command comes in and do a few things and that side of things? And then you have that like natural thing of like, I built a thing in-house. It's like, okay, well, actually be really useful if you could make it do paging now. And so you tack on a bit more and you're like, oh, I wish you could do this. And you tack on a bit more. And what starts out as like, this is a cheap little thing internally to sort of set up, becomes quite expensive. And then you hit all the rough edges of like, oh, well, Slack, you need to respond to the API within 3 seconds, which means if you're doing anything that has a long time, you know, to think about like asynchronous kind of work. And I guess like this is something that we see a fair amount, which is that people sort of like undersize how big this project, is to build. Do you think that was like similar for you folks?
Yeah, definitely. I think when you are, there are a lot of constraints around Slack and Slack bots. It's very easy and quick to do something quick and dirty, but then it doesn't always work, right? And when you're in an incident response, the last thing you want is for something to be going wrong. Remember, we implemented error logic such that it would just dump out the raw Go errors into a Slack thread on entering a command, because we were like, well, how do we then tell people that it hasn't been able to do the thing that they're asking for? So, you know, and that's, once you get past creating a Slack bot, it's then a case of, I remember, you know, anyone who's implemented the PagerDuty API, there are a lot of common pitfalls, let's say. But so, yeah, I think it's very easy and simple perhaps to do the basics, but then it starts to go wrong quite quickly, and it goes wrong quite a lot. So being able to have, like, just not have to worry about that, like not having to fix bugs in your instant response. Like, you know, I'm a big believer in, as a company, you should do what you're good at, and you should do what your core of, and how you're adding value and how you're creating value. A bud, that's getting financial insights from data, right? Not maintaining an incident management Slack bot that integrates with PagerDuty and GitHub and links to postmortems and nudges people in the right way and so on and so forth, right? So, you know, every time you're spending time fixing your bug in that is a time that it's taking away from us adding value to our customers.
Yeah, it's really well put. I think it's interesting as well that, like, this tooling tends to, for sort of reasons that are sort of a bit like historic, I think, it tends to fall into a sort of platform infrastructure type teams to own incident management processes. And it's very rare that you hire people into those roles whose core competency is like product and thinking about user experience. And it's a classic one of, like, you know, dumping Go errors into a channel. It's like, if your aim for your incident management process is to have people who are, like, you know, engineers and non-engineers sort of collaborating, it's amazing how those little bits of friction can put people off and, like, really hamper adoption, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think for me, this was always one of the core things about using Incident.io is that a good example of this is workflows capability, right? Like, workflows capability in Incident.io, like adding the ability for people to be able to go in and be like, if this, then that, basically. And right now that's used like across BUD. So a member of our client services team might be like, hey, if there's an incident involving one of my clients, I want it to send me a text message. They can just go in and add that, right? Previously, that just wouldn't have been possible or required development time for that one individual thing. Someone would have had to have gone and written code to do that explicit thing for that explicit person. So being able to, it gave us the ability to iterate our processes, being able to bring the right information to people at the right time. And the frequency of which we do a post-mortem or a post-incident analysis, and we're like, it would be really helpful if at this point in the incident, like, it popped out this graph and because I couldn't find the right graph. We can now just be like, oh, just create a workflow. And that's a super quick, easy way that allows us to improve our incident response. That wouldn't have been able to happen if we were using our incident bot, because the barrier to being able to make those iterative improvements to our process would be too high. And building something like workflows, like, that was just never going to happen if in a team of where we're spending an X number of person days out of an existing, you know, platform team time in a quarter. Whereas with Incident.io, you've got a team of tens of product engineers focused on how do we create a better product for incident response, like, every single day. And that's massive, right? Like, that's, you're always going to do a better job than we do.
Yeah, I think it's, I think the workflows point is actually, you know, and it's hard for me to sort of, like, sell this as sort of authentic but without bias, but, like, legitimately, I think it's one of those things where, like, incident management processes are sort of living things by their very nature. You have a big incident, you're like, well, one of the things we want to improve about this is not just, like, how do we, you know, fix the database issue or the runbook needs tidying up and stuff, but it's like the actual process needs to be iterated on. And I think when your iteration loop is like, I need to put a ticket on a backlog of a team that's probably already, like, super constrained on, like, time and effort and things, just means you can't do that. And then again, it kind of, like, if you don't do that one time, they push people off from providing feedback. They're like, just assume it's like, well, this is not a tool for me. I will leave this for sort of someone else to kind of feedback on and sort of iterate on in future, kind of thing. And you end up in this sort of, like, just locks down process. It doesn't really sort of continue as the organization does.
Exactly. And I think, you know, to go back to the point that I was saying earlier, like, your key value as an organization is to create value for you want to be providing a good product, right? And you want to be delivering that best experience. And when an incident happens, you're already not quite where you want to be, right? Like, you're already at a point where it's sometimes it can be a stressful situation for your clients and customers. And you want to, so your entire focus around incident management should be, how do we make this as easy and seamless as possible, right? Like, you want to be able to respond as quickly as possible. You want to be communicating as well as possible. And you want to be mitigating and resolving the issue as quickly as possible. But you want to spend your time focusing on, like, okay, how do we improve that process? How do we improve that value? How do we offer the best service in those instances, in those situations? And that's where you want your focus to be, not on having to figure out how to, like, build the tool that will, like, do the thing you want. You want it to be like, well, I want my process to, you know, involve this person at this time, because if there's a need to bring in a regulatory, like, communication person, for example, like, automatically identifying that rather than having to do internal staff training and so on and so forth, or building tools to do that. So yeah, you know, using something like incident, it's about being able to give you that flexibility to make those processes better so that you can deliver better value and better quality to your customers and clients.
Yeah, makes a ton of sense. I guess in the interest of, like, balance, right, there's often trade-offs, right, when you choose. It's not like everything is rosier on one side. That tends to be the case, right? Were there any, like, when you were looking at incident IO, were there any things that were, like, concerns in your mind? Like, a classic one being, like, you know, if I move to a solution, I give up some degree of flexibility because, like, code is, like, the ultimate amount of flexibility. Like, one would hope that, like, the benefits outweigh those costs. But, like, was there anything else in your mind that was, like, kind of consideration there?
Yeah, I think, I mean, when we talked to that, exactly that point around when you've got access to the code, you do have complete flexibility, right? So we were able to integrate whatever tool we wanted, whenever we wanted. And I think, you know, even to this day, maybe there were a couple of integrations that we had that still don't exist in Incident IO, right? But I think for me, the part of the question is, are you actually using that flexibility? Do you have time to use that flexibility? Do you have a business case to use that flexibility? The answer was normally no. Like, the amount of feature work we actually realistically did on it once it was sort of just doing its thing was almost nil. So on the point around flexibility, and I think this is something that we lost a couple of those integrations, it hasn't impacted our incident response processes at all, really. And I think this is one thing actually has been really nice to see more recently with Incident IO is the creation of more powerful and flexibility functionality like workflows and catalog and so on that allow you to almost replace the fact you don't have access to the code, if that makes sense. So yeah, for sure, you know, there are some integrations, but the question is, are you actually really going to be taking the advantage of having that flexibility? The vast majority of the time is not. The second thing then is, if you are going to lose that flexibility, you want to find a partner who is going to listen to your feedback. And with incident.io, you know, I think, you know, we're dropping feedback into sort of, we have a shared Slack channel with the team there. And, you know, we're constantly dropping bits of feedback in, and almost every time we're giving that feedback, it's acted on. At incident.io, you're almost obsessed with making the product better, and both in terms of simplicity for use, but also making it powerful, right? So, you know, if I come to a bit of feedback and say, hey, the team is struggling with this, like, it gets fixed, you know, it's because that's what you're trying to accomplish, and you're much more likely to spend that time and that resource on doing that and doing that well than we are. So yeah, you lose flexibility, but if you're going to do it, find someone you can have a really good relationship with and will take feedback on and is focused on making their product better, and then you haven't really lost anything in the grand scheme of things. If a thing makes sense to build, then in practice, I see generally incident will build that.
Nice. I think that's the key, like, the killer point there is, like, it makes sense to build. Like, I tend to see that, like, across the entire customer base, we do get a lot of feedback, but it's like, it's the best kind of feedback where someone's like, oh, we'd love it if it did this. And you're like, either, yes, that was already planned, and because you've asked for it now, we'll, like, reprioritize it. And it's a really light lift to sort of convince a team who are going to do something in a month's time to do it now because it will make a customer happy. Or it's stuff that we never even thought of, and the customer drops in and is like, we have this idea, and you're like, oh my gosh, like I can see how this is valuable to you, but also to all of the customers. So yeah, we're sort of, I think, in the fortunate position where we don't have many customers who are like, can we have the button in blue, please? And you're like, well, no, not really. You know?
I mean, that said, you know, you have the flexibility of being able to change like the words in announcements and the words on buttons to adapt to your processes, right? So, I mean, you're not a million miles away from having that flexibility of buttons in blue if that is going to help your own. And that's the thing. It's not a, you know, early days, maybe it was. Right now, it's not a you have to follow incidents process for doing incidents. Mm. It's what is your process? We will give you the tools to make your process like embedded into our tool. And that's super powerful because our process change, and we were talking about this earlier, our process changes, which means that when our process changes, we don't have to go and change our tool. We just have to go and change some configuration. And that's super nice to have.
Yeah, it's interesting. Our viewpoint has kind of softened here. So I think in the early days as founders, we were like, this is how we are going to run. We're going to ship very opinionated software and we're going to, you know, everyone will call it a this and they'll have a this process. And I think it was really good doing that in the early days because it helped us sort of ship fast because we could be quite opinionated about things. And I think one thing we've realized is like literally no two organizations have the same incident process. And it's such a bespoke thing that has to capture different sort of elements of the organization, different departments that need to be able to sort of work on things. And so the sort of the big tension now and the big balance we have to sort of strike is, you know, how flexible do you be? Because there's like an extreme you get to where you're so unopinionated and this is like, yeah, we're just a thing to create channels and do stuff and like automate things. And it's like, okay, cool. But now I'm building an entire process rather than, you know. So yeah, I think the way we sort of sit now is like, be opinionated where it matters, like define the framework, the guidelines, the sort of the model that we think is the right way to do it. But hey, if you don't want to call it a postmortem and you want to call it like a debrief document, you can call it that and that will flow through the whole product kind of thing. So yeah, it's sort of, it's been quite a journey, I think, getting there.
I think that's where, because, you know, when you, in situations where you do already have a terminal tool, so we migrated, right? And for me, that was an absolute no-brainer. You know, we already had a tool. I wanted us to be able to have better processes. Therefore, I was like, let's move over to this tool, which will allow us to do that. But, you know, there was obviously a slight element of having to adjust how people would work. So a good example of this was how you would sort of trigger things. So how would you trigger a page versus like what were the words that you would use in the different types of commands and so on and so forth, right? So I think back in our day, it was you would tag the bot in the channel and then you would say the command, whereas, you know, it's now the sort of the slash command. But, you know, having that kind of flexibility, but we also, it wasn't really a massive difference in terms of training people. And, you know, we did a single presentation to the company and then people just got it. I think we created a couple of looms as well. But yeah, so again, like a fairly seamless process. But again, I think that's slightly helped by the fact that, you know, you're able to adapt it into your own process.
Nice. Yeah. That makes sense. I'm going to ask you a question that I hate. I hate when anyone ever asks me this question because I'm always like, oh, I don't think in that way. But like when you think about like return on investment of like buying versus building, and it doesn't need to be monetary, right? It's not. It's very hard to quantify. Like, did it save us time? Did it do this? But like, how do you think about, and maybe, yeah, like in the context of incident, but also generally just like building versus buying, how do you sort of size those sort of two things up and think about where it makes sense?
Yeah, so for me, it's around three things, I guess. One, I like to call focus. So I don't think it's necessarily just about like the monetary cost of like, well, I could hire someone to work on Cassandra, or I could go and get, you know, use an off-the-shelf sort of hosted Cassandra solution, right? Like, I'm like, because ultimately it's also, yes, there's a monetary point there, but it's taking focus away from the organization. For me, like just being able to focus platform and our infrastructure developer experience teams around problems that are specific to us. And in that, you know, not, it's just one less thing that we have to worry about, that we have to maintain, that we have to spend X many days per quarter on. In terms of, if you want to think financially, I don't have the numbers to hand, but we've definitely spent, I would say we've probably spent less on incident.io than we have on just maintaining the tool. And, you know, that's a, you know, dollar for dollar, like easy comparison to make, right? But then the third thing is that it's just better, right? So it's a better tool. It allows our incident responses to be better. And this goes to the value of what we are as a company and what we deliver to our clients, right? we are focused on serving enterprises, and that means that we, you know, incidents have to be, you've got to execute on them perfectly. You've got to have good incident process. You've got to have strong service levels, whether that be in terms of your platform availability or how you respond in those situations. And our incident response has gotten a lot better because we've been able to codify those processes. But more than just getting better, we've enabled our incident processes to get better, but we've also enabled them to stay good as we've grown the team. So if I think about, you know, we've had a number of engineers leave and join since we introduced Incident.io, but now it makes training a lot easier. It makes people being embedded into those processes, and it makes that understanding of what an incident means a lot simpler. So if we think about the time that we have to spend now on training, it's less because the incident, you know, when you're in an incident, you're being given the information that you need. You have to spend less time thinking about the process and working out the process. So yeah, to kind of recap back over, like, both in terms of we've been able to increase focus, like not having to worry about incident, like dollar for dollar, we're spending less time maintaining this bot than we've been paying incident, you know, so direct sort of cost saving there. But then thirdly, it's enabled us to have better incident response. What does that mean? Better service to our clients, which means better NPS. It means better net revenue retention and client satisfaction, which ultimately feeds right down into revenue in your P&L, right? So can't really argue with that.
No. And also, I don't think I could have sort of found a better point at which to say thanks very much. That's sort of like the high point ending for us. But I appreciate you taking the time to talk through this.
Great. Thanks, Chris.
Cheers.